Welcome to the Changing Scripts podcast. I've been documenting my experience learning simplified Mandarin Chinese on a YouTube channel for the past year and a half. Offline, I've been having conversations with anybody that would discuss language with me, and I want to get some of those conversations on this podcast. There are some really interesting viewpoints about the Chinese language, about learning the Chinese language, about language learning in general that I really, really, really want to capture and share with you. My main focus on this podcast is going to be twofold. I want to capture both perspectives. What are those perspectives? One is other people going through what I'm going through, probably further along the line of learning the Chinese language. So I'm going to interview people who are either in the process of learning or in the process of using the Chinese language, coming from outside of the Chinese language, from a language. It could be English, but it could be any other language. Don't worry, the interviews are going to be in English because I have that linguistic limitation myself, but they could be coming from any language to the Chinese language. Okay, so the second perspective is people who come from within the Chinese language to another language. Yes, I'm going to interview Chinese people on their experiences learning languages after their first language. And that is the conversation that is often missed when we talk about the Chinese language, is getting the perspective from within to outside. So I want to go in and out of the Chinese language from different perspectives, from people from different languages and those experiences. We'll talk about methods, we'll talk about in and outside of the classroom, we'll talk about usage, inevitably we'll talk about pronunciation, reading, writing, whatever the people that I'm interviewing are most interested in about their language learning experiences or about the languages that we're talking about. So there's a whole lot of content that we're talking about here. So these podcasts are going to get long. All of my information are in the show notes, and I welcome your feedback and ideas. And if you are learning the Chinese language or come from the Chinese language and have learned other languages, I'd like to interview you. Contact me and we'll hash that out. Let's dive into these conversations about the Chinese language because that is the point. So thank you, Liz, for joining us today for this conversation about language learning and the Chinese language. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Olivia. I am from New York City and also from California, but also all over the world. Spent some time, about 2 years in India, took a year off, went and traveled, started doing a travel blog. And then now I am in Shanghai, China. I am an international school teacher, also teaching yoga. I love words. I love to write. That's huge to me. And I've learned languages all my life.
Well, let's dig into that. What is your language learning background? Like, what would you consider your first or your first language or your first languages?
Sure. So my mother tongue growing up was Cantonese. And the reason for that was because my mom didn't speak English. She immigrated to the U.S. when she was in her 30s, and she met my dad, who was from Taiwan, who knew Mandarin. And so growing up, I spent most of my time with my mom, and I grew up speaking Cantonese. In school, I was learning Spanish before I even knew English.
Awesome.
Yeah, because I lived in a very awesome neighborhood of Brooklyn in the 80s. And yeah, I was learning Spanish before I even knew English. I was taking my mom to the grocery stores, showing her labels, and kind of being a translator for her in the world. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I ended up learning Spanish in a little bit when I was in New York, but also a little bit in middle school. I studied about 3 years of Spanish. Loved it. Especially loved doing the accents. That was my favorite part. Despite being, you know, the only Asian kid in my class, full of, you know, white kids and Spanish learners, and also other kids who already knew Spanish, I had the most perfect accent out of everyone, and I loved it. I don't know. It was great. And then from there, I went back to New York City, and I studied Mandarin for about 3 years. Ended up going to college and studied Mandarin there as well. I always kind of encountered roadblocks and felt like I didn't push myself to where I needed to be with Mandarin. Mm-hmm. I think part of the reason why is because I was comparing my language learning experience of Chinese to Spanish. Mm-hmm. And Spanish for me just flowed, whereas Chinese didn't, and I wasn't as interested in it. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe because it's not like a Latin-based language. Mm.
I have just a passing familiarity with the differences between Cantonese and Pudonghua, but was there any interference when you went from Cantonese to Mandarin? Is that possibly one of the roadblocks? Or
I think the grammar between Cantonese and Mandarin is quite similar.
Okay.
When I was learning Mandarin, all of my teachers often said to me that I had sort of a Cantonese twang or a Cantonese flavor to the way I spoke Mandarin.
Well, that makes sense. You came from the Cantonese language into Mandarin, so...
Yes.
Yeah.
But I really loved it. I really loved that it was, like, slightly different from other people's Mandarin.
Yeah. Well, let's dig into... So is that all the... Is that all? I have one. Is that all the languages we're talking about? Is Cantonese, Spanish, English, and Mandarin?
I also lived on a remote island for about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And at that point, I had been dating someone who was Portuguese.
Yeah.
So I knew a little bit of Portuguese, and I ended up learning Tetun on the island of Ataúro in Timor-Leste and having Tetun lessons, which is wonderful, too.
How the heck do you spell Tetun?
T-E-T-U-N.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. Beautiful language.
Wow.
Really cool people.
Yeah. So you definitely have an affinity towards learning languages.
Everywhere I go, when I travel, I try and learn a little bit. I think it makes a difference with the locals, but it makes a difference with yourself, too, in terms of, like, how you see your world and how, like, comfortable you want to get into it. And you make a decision to learn a language or to attempt to learn a language, you're really just stepping in there.
Absolutely. Well, let's dig into them in chronological order as best we can. Cantonese was mostly spoken in the home, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So how, do you have any memories of learning or using the language as a child?
Yes.
Is there anything that stuck out as a part of the language that you like to play with or a part of the language that you struggled with?
Cantonese is the language that I use with my friends and family growing up. It's the only way I could communicate with my grandma and my grandparents. It's the language that I hear in the background when there are soap operas happening as my aunt was watching them. It was like the only window that my mom could see through. Because she didn't know any English. I just remember at one point when I was an adolescent, I noticed that my cousins around me, when they would speak to my grandma, she would speak in Cantonese and they would always respond back in English. And at a certain point, I was noticing that they were losing their ability to speak to her about anything deeper than what I call eat, sleep, drink Cantonese.
Yeah.
So at that point, I kind of made a decision in myself, recognizing that that could be me, that I could lose that language. It'd be so easy to. I decided that I would just work on learning Cantonese or only speak to my parents and my grandparents in Cantonese. And then as I started learning Mandarin, because I would learn Mandarin formally in school, I would get vocabulary words. So now, even when I speak to my dad, who's a Mandarin speaker, I will mix in Mandarin and Cantonese when speaking to both my mom and my dad on Skype. Yeah. it's really cool.
Yeah.
And sometimes some English, too, because my dad knows some English and he likes wordplay as well.
Yeah. Nice. Because Cantonese is your first language, it was your home language, so you don't remember learning it at any point, right? Because, I mean, you grew up with it.
Yeah. No, Cantonese has a ton of tones. I think, like, maybe Some people say 8 tones, some people say 14, some people have 16. So
what?
It's
really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's not something that is easy to pick up,
right,
unless you just kind of grew up hearing it. So I don't remember formally studying it.
Right.
I remember the way I remember learning it was being a kid in a high chair and having my mom try and feed the bear on the high chair next to me, and then trying to feed me and trying to like trick me to eat.
Sure.
But I do remember when I went to college, there was a Cantonese speaker in the lab typing up a paper as well, and I remember saying something like to him, like, "I like to eat shrimp," and I remember saying, "Oh, what's on you?" He's like, "Ha ha." And he just started laughing at me, busting out laughing. I was like, "Why are you laughing at me?" Like, you know, Cantonese is terrible. It's shit. But he just laughed because he said, "You speak Cantonese like a child." And it's true.
Mm.
I didn't realize that. Because in Mandarin, you know, xia is, you know, shrimp. So it would be like saying, "Wo xi huan xia xia." Like, I like shrimp.
Okay.
So I would like double certain things.
Yeah.
So I think even though I grew up as an adult, my language didn't necessarily evolve. But I love that about my Cantonese.
Yeah. I'm having vague memories of a book that I read. I'm not going to remember the name of it. I'll put it in the show notes for listeners. But it was woman that grew up in the U.S., her parents were from Iran, but they left, and so she grew up in the U.S., and she went back to Tehran as an adult, and she thought she was fluent in the language, and she was to a degree. She kept calling it, like, she had, like, kitchen Farsi at her disposal, and she kept saying, you know, I can talk to people at home, but as soon as she went out and talked to people about things other than what you were saying, the eat, sleep, whatever, like those topics, she's like, she would just completely fall off of the language and be like, "Oh my gosh, I thought I was a fluent speaker." You know, she was like out of her depth, so she had to formally study a language she thought she grew up with her whole life.
Yes.
And a lot of people commented, she said, and this is what just reminded me of what you just said, a lot of people commented, they were like, "Wow, your Farsi is very, very, very childlike." So it reminds me a lot. I'll find the name of the book and send it to you.
Yeah. It's totally.
Very,
I totally had that experience traveling in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Be like, "Oh yeah, I can order things for dim sum," but you know, it's just as good as about like pointing to certain dishes and being able to say the foods, you know? So it's definitely eat, sleep, drink, Cantonese.
Yeah. Can you, after that was pointed out to you for the first time, were you able to hear the difference between how you were saying things and how adults, I'm kind of doing air quotes right now, on how adults were saying it in Cantonese?
I only really felt it until I went to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
I didn't feel it with my own family.
Sure.
Yeah, because the topics that I would have been able to access with my family as a, you know, first-gen ABC are very different than probably the topics of conversation that people in Hong Kong talk about sitting around a dim sum table. You know, businessmen talking and laughing and poking each other on the street about something that happened.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So let's talk about Spanish. Maybe. You said you learned Spanish before English, so did you learn that in the neighborhood, or did you learn it in school as well?
I learned it in school, but I also just grew up kind of hearing it and getting a love for just the way the words sounded. I don't remember a whole lot more. I just like saying "carro." I can't even do it anymore. You have to practice this. "Carro." You know? Yeah.
So it sounds like it was a more playful experience with the language?
It was. It was because of the way I was learning it in school.
Mm-hmm.
You know? The teacher, Senora Wildman, would set us up in three rows, 1, 2, and 3, and then have each kid go up to the whiteboard from your team to write down, you know, vocabulary words when she was describing either the content of the word or like full sentences. And I remember this phrase that we used to say in middle school, yo tengo un gato en mis pantalones. You know what that means?
I have a cat with pants? No, I missed the last part of the sentence.
I have a cat in my pants.
In my pants. Okay.
I don't know why just things like that from middle school like really stick in your head.
Yeah. Well, that's funny, and as a kid, I think even as an adult, it would stick, because that's not a standard, super boring, basic sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're just, like, putting words together and doing it with games.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that sounds like a fun teacher. What else did she do?
She was very strict, but also very fun.
Yeah.
I don't know, I think she sometimes had us, like, make games, like, do things that were very hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
She cold-called us,
mm-hmm.
which is basically a term in teaching, right? You mm-hmm. call on someone who doesn't know, you know, doesn't have their hand raised, mm-hmm. to kind of keep everyone engaged and keep them on their toes.
Yeah.
I don't remember a lot, you know. Oh, she also had the taco parties.
Oh, yes.
The taco parties were amazing. So at the end of every semester, you know, team 1, 2, and 3, like, one team who was the winner, they wouldn't have to do anything. But then, you know, team 2 and team 3 would have to prepare the things for the taco party.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have memories of going to the grocery store and getting, you know, the cut-up ground beef. And, like, another person in the class would be in charge of the seasoning,
mm-hmm.
and someone would be in charge of the tortilla flour.
Yeah.
And it's just, those were good memories, you know? You're learning language, but you also kind of have this communal space where you know you're going to celebrate each other's mm-hmm. successes at the end of the semester. So that, yeah, that's, I'm always going to remember the taco parties.
Aww.
Taco parties. Dope.
So the classes that you're teaching now, are you teaching language or are you teaching a subject?
I used to be like a sort of more homeroom based teacher, but now I'm teaching mostly English.
When I taught language, I found myself kind of pulling things that I liked from teachers that I had a warm, fuzzy feeling from when I was in their classroom. I found myself pulling some of their things into my own teaching methods. Do you do any of that?
My teaching is mostly pulled from my own experiences growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, growing up, I didn't have a lot, and I actually didn't grow up with my parents for some time when I was growing up in California, and so my teachers ended up being like my family in a way, like really looking out for me,
yes.
like really aware of my situation and knowing that I was different from the other kids. So I actually started teaching in Harlem,
mm-hmm.
in New York City, and I drew my inspiration from my students, and I don't even know how to describe it, like, it was powerful,
mm-hmm.
and I drew my power from them, and from my experiences, and
mm-hmm.
just believing in them, and wanting to them to, like, be the greatness that I know all of them, knew all of them could be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's, of course, teaching methods, which I learned through
mm-hmm.
Teach for America,
sure.
and other things that I did, but I think it's more about a way of being. It's like a good language teacher believes in you, even when you
mm-hmm.
don't believe in yourself, even when you're first learning.
That's so beautiful. I'm writing that down. A year and a half ago, when I started the YouTube channel connected to this podcast, I was convinced I was going to... I left a PhD program. I was convinced we were going to move back to China, we're going to make some money, and I'm going to skill up, I'm going to make the mobile apps I've been wanting to make for forever to help the students en masse, not just in one classroom. And I found I've gone completely... I wouldn't say off track, in a different direction. I've gone from wanting to teach a certain thing that disrupts communication, like inflections and verb tenses, and creating an app to help that, to motivation. I found that motivation in language learning seems to be a gigantic, gigantic issue. And what you just said just absolutely strikes a chord with that in such a huge way.
It's about fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time you'll come to, I don't know, mostly Asian countries, mm-hmm. and people who are learning English will say, oh, my English is not good. And one thing that one teacher said to me when I was not learning language, but just in general, no, actually, I was watching a colleague teach, and she said to the kids, and I always use this phrase every year at some point in the year, especially mm-hmm. when like motivation is waning, is, hey, listen, you raise your hand, you answer the question, what's the worst thing that could happen? Oh, you get the answer wrong,
mm-hmm.
and then what happens?
Mm-hmm.
You learn, everyone else learns mm-hmm. in the classroom, and I bet, you know, even the teacher learns.
Yeah.
So I think it's motivation, it's willingness to try,
mm-hmm.
and you know, maybe it's just a cultural thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I am American born Chinese, so I have some American qualities. I've been told that I'm very direct sometimes too, which I didn't realize was an American thing apparently.
I always blame that on my New Yorkness, my 8 years in that state.
Yeah.
But by blame, I also mean compliment that, because I think that East Coasters in the U.S. can be more direct. But I also think that can be an honest, reliable trait, too, where we won't bullshit in a way that some other folks might.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I just want to tell people, like, just try.
Yeah.
You can learn one new vocabulary mm-hmm. word a day, and that's mm-hmm. that. Like today, when I'm about to study Chinese at Jiao Tong University here, and there was the security woman standing in the front, mm-hmm. and I had asked her, you know, where do I go? And when I left, I just started speaking to her in Chinese. She, of course, gave me the standard compliment on my Chinese. And she mentioned how her English was not good, and I say, hey, listen, every day I come by school, I'll teach you a new vocabulary word. And she's like, oh, I don't know. I was like, just ask her, what vocabulary word do you want to learn today? And you know, every day, just learn a little bit.
Yeah. We're talking about language, which inevitably involves culture, which inevitably involves different lenses that are coming into and out of and through the languages, through all these different things. I mean, it's not a linear path.
Okay.
Which is part of the frustration for me, because I want it to be A, B, C, D. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, my students used to say to me, like, we'd have a speaking exercise with, like, partners, and they'd do it once, and they go, okay, teacher, I'm done. I'm like, have you really talked about everything about that entire conversation? Have you exploited everything you can? They're like, oh, yeah. So I tweaked it just a tiny bit, and I'd go, have you talked about this? And they'd go, oh, no. And then they turn and do it again just with that little bit. And so it's just, but that's not language. It's messier than all of that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
If you're enjoying this conversation about the Chinese language and would like to participate, if you're studying in the Chinese language or if you come from the Chinese language and have learned other languages, either perspective is both perspectives are greatly appreciated on this channel. Let's have a conversation. Let's tape that sucker and let's get it into this podcast. Contact me and let's etch out the details on how to get you and your valuable language learning experience onto this podcast. All of my information is in the show notes. Also, all over social media except Facebook, I am Steph Fuccio, STEPHFUCCIO. That includes Gmail for my email, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and LinkedIn. So I look forward to hearing from you.
And I think the longer you teach, the more you kind of pick up on things. Mm-hmm. And you can't just teach vocabulary. It's mm-hmm. not memorization. It's being able to hear it, being able to say it, mm-hmm. being able to say it in a sentence,
mm-hmm.
being able to hear it in many different kinds mm-hmm. of sentences.
So, and many different accents.
Yeah. Practicing with people in your class.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's a lot of different things. It isn't memorization, but it is. But memorization is a part of it, especially when you're talking about. Because I just took my HSK, I get my HSK 2 results on Tuesday. I just took it last month. And I rushed way too fast through two. Through one, I took my time. I was like, oh, I'm building. This is getting better. Two, I whipped through, and there's so much I have to go back and review. But in one, I felt really confident because there's 150 words. There's only so much you can confuse two words when there's 150 words. Now I've got the extra 150 from HSK2, and I'm building up like another 100 right now with HSK3. And so my confusion on words that look similar is crazy. And I need to go back to writing them over and over and over and over to see the differences, to feel the differences. And that process is so slow and consuming and yet interesting but frustrating, but it is kind of like a body memorization.
That is what I love about Chinese.
What's that? Yeah. Huh?
The thing that I love about Chinese that's different than Spanish or any other language is that you kind of get into this meditation when you're writing the characters.
Yes. Yes.
Left to right, top to bottom. Mm-hmm. There's a method, there's a way. And you really can get better and you can see the difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's the care that you put towards constructing this symbol of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I cannot agree more. I accidentally say, draw the characters, draw the words, more than I say write them. Because to me it feels like they're an art form. And I'm frustrated because I want to communicate already, but I really enjoy and do feel like it's a meditative thing when I write them.
Yeah.
So it's like this.
Lots of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if that's like wrapped in with culture and how some of my fourth graders were trying to study English. But I wasn't giving them that. I was giving them the more sort of like creative, goofy English teacher side.
Oh, that they were trying to do the methodical, repetitive kind of thing?
And the piece of feedback that I got from parents was like, can you make it more like a drill?
Yes. Oh, I was just talking about this the other day. I was teaching adults in San Francisco. There were some Korean students and some Japanese students in this particular advanced level conversation class, and I actually got a complaint that they said, and my boss, he said, okay, look, this is the information. He said, they've said that there's too much conversation and they need to learn more. And he's like, take that for what you will, but if you can adjust it culturally and otherwise so that they feel like they're learning more, that'd be great. And I was like, okay, I get that, because I lived in Northeast Asia and I kind of understood that there's a different idea of what learning is.
Yes.
And I did feedback. I did, you know, collect information as they were talking. We set up things. We did new vocabulary. Like, I did all of that, but that wasn't enough. They wanted more of the, like, I think more of the struggle and more of the new. And I was coming from the thing of, well, it's like you can learn 7 new words a day and then you'll max out and oof, that would be exhausting. And they're like, no, bring it on.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, it's very different.
Yeah, it's very, very different. Do you think that American language learners are lazy? And that's a huge request for generalization, but there it is.
I don't think they're lazy. I think they don't have exposure the way people in European countries do.
Mm-hmm.
If your neighbor just along your border can speak a different language and you're mixing and coming in and out of each other's countries and your space is that close, it's part of the culture to be able to speak different languages. For Americans, it's not. I think like only 10% of Americans have a passport, and of those 10% that have a passport, I think 10% of those, meaning 1%, actually venture anywhere beyond the bounds of what a cruise ship would provide for you. And that's not an opportunity to learn language.
Right.
That's not, you know. The problem with the way the U.S. is right now is because we're not talking to each other. Left, right, we're not people of different colors, different races, different thinking. We're not talking to each other.
Yeah. We're driving up hard. We're definitely doing that.
But that doesn't make Americans lazy. It just makes them fearful.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit ignorant, but I guess I couldn't say. You know, I don't know what's going on through another person's mind. I think they also get a lot of... how do I say this? They also get a lot of points for just trying and doing the dancing bear, especially in China. If you just say a couple of words. Mm-hmm. Oh, your Chinese is so good! Oh, that frustrates me. Like, no, it's not. And so then maybe some people feel like it's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
But then there you have some people whose Chinese is amazing. So maybe it just depends on what stage of life you're in.
Yeah. Fair enough. Let's move on to English. When did you start learning / using English?
I learned English through Sesame Street.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Interview done. The best way ever. How did you feel about that experience?
I mean, I think when I was a kid, I was just processing everything, mm-hmm. processing my world through grocery store labels, other things as well. I really grew a love for English, mm-hmm. I think, in middle school when I started working on the yearbook.
Mm-hmm.
And I got inspiration from other teachers and from a teacher who, you know, ran around the classroom with a rubber chicken and, like, slammed the rubber chicken on people's desks. He made me memorize poems. And, you know, a poem to this day, which I can still recite. Like, I hold that within myself now.
Which poem?
Lord Byron, She Walks in Beauty.
Oh! Would you give us a few lines?
Oh, maybe, you know. Maybe something that I can aspire to. She walks in beauty, like the night, of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's best of dark and bright be in her aspect and in her eyes, thus mellowed to that tender light which heaven to gaudy day denies. One shade the more, one ray the less, had half impaired that nameless grace which waves in every raven tress. Okay,
thank you. Oh man, it's amazing what shapes us in the classroom and what we remember later.
Mm.
Really, really, truly is.
Words. I love words. Yeah. And I think that's what those experiences in middle school gave me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I also think expression is something that didn't always come easy to me. Mm-hmm. Still doesn't. In a lot of ways, I think it's partially cultural.
Mm-hmm.
Because I grew up, you know, American, but also very much in a home that had like lots of Chinese traditional ideas in it, where children were not as like heard as they were seen.
I'm trying to think of what to say that wouldn't
wouldn't
insult
family.
I grew up in a somewhat, I don't know if traditional is the way to say it, but a very, you're more important when you're an adult kind of European mindset, where children are, you can go play over there, but don't really interrupt the adults right now kind of thing.
Mm.
So I get that. And what children said wasn't really, I wouldn't say valued, because it wasn't that bad, but not really encouraged. Yeah. Some people have an affinity when they're growing up and liking words, have an affinity towards either speaking or reading and writing. Do you fall into one of those, or did it just kind of encompass everything?
I love speaking,
mm-hmm.
but I don't do it as often as I do writing.
Mm-hmm.
And the best thing is when I can combine those two things together, mm-hmm. when I can perform
mm-hmm.
my spoken word poetry.
Exactly. I was going to say, I could see you being you are a spoken word performer.
I guess clearly. You can self-identify as that.
Have you done that?
I have.
Yeah.
I have. And I love doing it in places where you know no one.
Yeah.
Like, I did it in Costa Rica once.
Yeah.
They had an open mic night, and I was like, you know what?
That's worse.
Go and do it.
You did it in Spanish.
I did it in English.
Yeah.
Of course, people there, it was Montezuma, Costa Rica, a place where people, there were travelers passing through, and, you know, it's a economy based around tourism. Mm-hmm. So, it was awesome. It was awesome. Yeah, and I have some on my website as well, and some other projects around it, but I want to do more of that. You know, I want to go to a cafe in Shanghai and just start doing that. But my problem is that I find it very hard sometimes to sit in those emotions and to make eye contact with the crowd. And so even as I was just, you know, reciting that poem to you, Lord Byron, I used to like close my eyes because it's something that you have to work on to have your words resonate. And same thing when you're learning a language. Mm-hmm. You can speak the words, but can you feel the words and have someone else feel those things too?
Yeah. Oh, that's so true. That's so true. I was just thinking, I can't think of the name of them. It wasn't a spoken word thing so much as it was like a narrative kind of performance by about 3 or 4 different folks in one evening. Concrete is the name of the organization. And I love that kind of thing. But I don't know.
What do you mean by that kind of thing?
That telling a story live in person. Because I agree with you, like this medium is very comfortable for me. I can create it in this bubble and I can put it into the world and I can interact with people if they so choose about it afterwards. But for me, live people in front of me as anything is happening, even rehearsed, unrehearsed, anything, performance-wise, it distracts me a little.
Yeah,
and I feel like I would lean towards doing things to, not just to get their reaction, but I would involve too much of their feedback in it, that it would morph the narrative, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, whatever happens in that moment.
Yeah.
Is happening,
yeah,
and it's done. Whatever feedback you receive, whatever you give out into that space, and it's done. But there's something very noble, I find, about performing it, and there's also overperforming it. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
I think there's a lot happening in the interplay of performance,
so true.
And words.
So true. I just realized how much of a control freak I just sound like. Like it would be ruined if there were people there. But then when there was. But I like giving presentations, and I definitely feed off of what people are, how they're reacting to the information that's going out to them, and I can easily morph that, and that's a fun experience for me. But for some reason, when it's a story, I feel a little more of a control. Like,
is it because it's your own personal story?
I think so. And I haven't actually, to be fair, I've only done the spoken word thing or the narrative thing in public, in my head. I haven't done it in person yet. But I've done, as I'm watching people do it, I'm envisioning the different things that I could do like they're doing, only in my way. And so
that's wonderful. You should do it.
Oh, I applied for. They have one like every month, and I applied for the last one, but too late.
Yeah,
missed the deadline. But I'm gonna keep doing it because I want to do it.
Go so that you can also be inspired by.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was insanely inspiring. Like I was taking notes during some of the stories. I was like, oh my god, that's amazing.
that's what I'm talking about. That's that passion.
Stories are inspiring. Words are inspiring. How people use them are inspiring. Cantonese, Spanish, and English have very, very different sounds in them. And you said you were a speaking. Oriented, or you lean more towards speaking than the other ones. How would you describe the differences in the sounds of those languages to you?
I'm also very inclined towards music.
Mm-hmm.
I think with English, it's a lot more alliteration. To me, it's about where you choose to pause. Like a lot of my writing when I write,
mm-hmm.
isn't necessarily how you would write a formal letter to someone.
Mm-hmm.
But my writing sounds like I'm speaking to someone.
Yeah.
But it works somehow. I think Mandarin, when I hear it as an outsider, and I still believe I'm very much an outsider to it, can be like a song if it doesn't have a certain Biaozhun standard Beijing accent. I've also got a little bit of discrimination happening there because, you know, Cantonese and Taiwanese don't always like that accent. I think Cantonese to me sounds like home.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like home. Like when I went to go visit my mom's hometown where she grew up and see the house where she lived and the fields where she used to play.
Mm-hmm.
I stepped out the taxi and now all of a sudden someone said, "Oh, are you Ty's daughter?" And I just felt like I was home. Yeah.
Was that someone that knew you were coming? Or did they just recognize?
Well, I actually didn't know if I would find my mom's place.
Yeah.
Because all the time I'd ask, like, where are you from? Where are you from? She'd say, like, Taishan, which is this big, big place. Or she would say Guangdong, which is even bigger than Taishan.
Yeah.
She finally gave me the address. And she was like, this place is next to a banyan tree.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a well next to the house. I was like, really? There's no way in hell I'm going to find this place. Like, this place has probably been all bulldozed and turned into, like, you know, skyscrapers or something else. Like, that's China.
Mm-hmm.
Things change.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got off and there was this Ai, and she was just... Are you Ty's daughter?
Whoa.
No. I think she was playing things behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And she called one of her friends in New York City whose sister was living there. And that's how they knew. But at that exact moment to come off the cab and have that happen, it was legit.
Yeah.
I got off the banyan tree was there.
It was still there.
The well was there.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was insane.
Wow.
So Cantonese to me feels like home.
Yeah. Do any of those languages feel softer, or do any of them feel... rougher is not really the right word.
Yeah.
Choppier, or... I don't know.
Cantonese feels warmer.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, stereotypically, the stereotype of the loud Chinese man comes from Cantonese, but to me it feels warmer, especially I find when it's spoken by women or people who sing pop songs. Like oftentimes I'll find even my friends from China, they love singing Cantonese songs because they feel like that language is more romantic somehow. Mandarin to me is like a song, like a bird song.
Yeah.
But you know, not all bird songs will resonate with you.
Right. Hey, there are some bird sounds I like hearing and some that I'm like, seriously, I'd rather have construction. So I get that.
Yeah. For English, I feel like it depends on who's speaking it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it can be stuffy for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Spanish, I just want somebody to talk to me in Spanish all day.
Mm-hmm.
All day, baby.
What is it? Because I learned German in high school. No, I didn't. I was supposed to learn German in high school. I tried to learn Italian as an adult and it failed miserably. And I tried to learn Spanish a little bit at university, but it wasn't until I went down to Latin America and I was surrounded by the Spanish language that it hit me like a ton of bricks. And that playful, like, yes, more thing that you're talking about hit me big. And it's never left. What is it about the Spanish language that's so... Spanish language / culture, because how can you really separate the two? That's... Well, is yours attached to a place? a region or a country or a people?
I don't think I've had that yet, okay. But I think I had that a little bit because I grew up in Southern California, so I was hearing it around me from people, and mm-hmm. a lot of my friends were Spanish, native Spanish speakers, mm-hmm. my next door neighbor was. I had that experience in China
mm-hmm.
when I came to study abroad.
Mm-hmm.
2 days before I was supposed to come to China, I got into an accident. I was on my bike in New York City. Mm-hmm. It broke my collarbone. Didn't know if I would be able to study abroad. My parents begged me to stay, and I was like, no, this is my chance to go abroad. I don't know when I'll get this again, you know, Brooklyn kid from the 80s, like, you know, I was never supposed to be abroad. I was never supposed to graduate from college or study abroad. So basically, I broke my collarbone, mm-hmm. didn't even know if I needed surgery. I got on the plane, and I had an 8-finger sling around me on the plane, got special assistance from the flight attendants. Got off the plane, and after studying Chinese for 5 years, I couldn't even manage to find the words to say, having packed up my whole life, mm-hmm. you know, my whole, what I thought, all the things I thought I needed in like mm-hmm. 4 huge giant suitcases, to say, can I get some help with my bags to the porters around me?
Yeah.
So I think language, like you said, like, gets those playful elements, not only when you're studying them with other people, but when bad shit happens to mm-hmm. you too. Or like when you're going to the hospital, when you're like living your life, like, you know, I learned all the words for surgery and broken bone.
Yeah.
In my first few months in China, because I had to, right?
Right.
I had to take the buses and do all that stuff.
Yeah. Wow. So did you go to the hospital as soon as you got to?
Yeah, pretty much got there next yeah. day. Just like, what's going on with my bone, doctor? Do I need surgery or not?
Oh my goodness.
I don't regret that decision. It's a big part of the reason why I'm living the life I am.
Yeah, you're a brave, brave person. Nothing's gonna stop you.
Or just reckless.
No, because it's not like you flew and then ignored the pain and just let it get worse. I mean, you took care of it as soon as you got there, so.
If you're enjoying this conversation about the Chinese language and would like to participate, if you're studying in the Chinese language or if you come from the Chinese language and have learned other languages, either perspective is greatly, actually both perspectives are greatly appreciated on this channel. Let's have a conversation. Let's tape that sucker and let's get it into this podcast. Contact me and let's etch out the details on how to get you and your valuable language learning experience onto this podcast. All of my information is in the show notes. Also, all over social media except Facebook, I am Steph Fuccio, STEPHFUCCIO. That includes Gmail for my email, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and LinkedIn. So I look forward to hearing from you.
Why do you say that you weren't supposed to go overseas? You weren't supposed to do all those things. Where does that...
I didn't grow up in a family with a lot.
Mm-hmm.
My mom still works. My mom used to work in a factory, you know, sewing clothes for mm-hmm. pennies on the dime.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was a waiter in, like, you know, Midtown, and neither of them had graduated from college, so I was like the first person in my family to go to college.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Travel didn't really seem like a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how or when I would travel.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, you know, maybe going to see my grandma in Taiwan when I was, you know, 4 years old, a little kid.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you look at people with my story, with my statistics, as you would say. I'm not supposed to have graduated from college. I'm not supposed to, like, have then gone on to get my master's or to, like, live the life that I was. I shouldn't have been able to take a gap year.
I want to kick back a little bit on this idea.
Yeah.
Do you think, because I, similar aspects of my background, my parents didn't even graduate high school. They came to the U.S. as immigrants, and they just worked. And they worked, and they worked, and they worked. And I don't even know all of the jobs that they did. All I know is that somehow they raised three children and eventually moved us to the suburbs, where we had a ridiculously good educational system that I didn't even appreciate until, like, years later when I was in college and could do way more than the people around me because of the high school that I went to. That wasn't even a private high school. And so,
yeah, that's, like, similar to me, because had I not had a good education in California, I wouldn't have had a good education in high school and then so forth.
But this makes me think about language, Liz. This makes me think, because there's this split online. I'm obsessed with language learning online, because there's so much interesting things, so many interesting things happening with languages online. Not instead of the language learning classroom, probably in addition to in some regards, but kind of a parallel life. And there are a number of polyglots that are doing their thing, and there are a number of language learners that are doing their thing, and there are people watching who are kind of hesitantly thinking about learning languages. And the polyglots seem to be very confident with what they're doing. And they seem to come from a background where they were expected to do many things. And so they did them. And some of them aren't, but I'm generalizing, of course. And then you have the language learners, which is a much bigger spectrum of people. And they might be learning one language, they might be learning multiple ones. But then you have the viewers who are super hesitant, and they have that fear that you're talking about with language and with making mistakes. And they're thinking about it. And some of them cross over and start learning a language, and some of them don't, and they just watch for a while. And that's cool. I watch cooking shows, and I don't cook. So I get that. But is language learning, isn't it a affinity thing? Is it a privilege thing for some folks? Is it a badge of wealth? Because for a large part of the world, it isn't. It's just how you function in the world, is you have to learn these languages.
Yeah. Well, for me, I had a window. You know? As much as I was a window for my mom, I had a window into Cantonese, and because I had that, I saw how it was able to shape my concepts, my world. So I think I have an edge, had an edge in that way into language. And then later on, like, through college courses, I learned, oh yeah, that's, like, actually a really positive thing to learn language from a young age, to have that, to be flexible. So maybe it's about flexibility on one hand. I think part of it in the U.S. is that it's cultural. But I don't know. I think it's cultural. Something has to either happen to you in your life as a result of your circumstances, or some experience abroad, maybe, or maybe a person who touches you in your life. So you were talking about motivation earlier, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a place you want to visit, you want to go. You got to build up this idea in your head that maybe you associate with language in order to I can only speak for myself.
Of course. I'm just wondering if, on some level, I feel like there's this expectation of, I need to do all of this before I start learning language for some folks. Like, there's this, I'm
like,
not
what?
Ready yet. I don't know, that's the thing. I don't get it, because I usually, like, as much as I suck and I've never gotten to a high level yet, I keep trying because I'm stubborn and I like culture. So even if I don't get there, I'll learn stuff about the culture as I'm trying to get there. But I know a lot of people are much more careful about what they do. And part of me is kind of trying to tease out, what is the carefulness with language?
I think it's about resilience and about grit.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's like a big buzzword right now, mm-hmm. but like, Americans are so used to, at least for a long time, mm-hmm. they were so used to being thought of as having good education mm-hmm. systems or being good or being confident.
Mm-hmm.
And I am really surprised why, despite being a country that's known for its confidence and sometimes overconfidence, why we don't have more language learners.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, again, it's exposure. It's being willing to talk to people who are different than you.
Yeah. And letting go of it being perfect the first time. That fear of
incorrectness. Who wants to be perfect? This is so boring.
A lot of people want to be perfect. Like, mistakes mean so much more than just mistakes.
Or maybe it's like, remember I had told you that phrase in Spanish that I thought was funny?
Yeah.
Like, my favorite phrase in Chinese was when I had a Chinese class.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking and they said, what would you do if there was an apocalypse? You know, world apocalypse, zombie invasion, whatever. Like, that to me was fun and I had to use a sentence structure. Mm-hmm. And so I said, if there was an apocalypse, 我会把我的衣服脱下来. I would take off all my clothes. And I would run the streets amok.
Yeah.
That's what I said. You know, like, maybe it's just being able to feel that you can express your true self.
Yeah.
Or your, ideas in language. Maybe that's what it is.
Mm,
maybe when you first start off, you're not able to express those
mm-hmm.
things.
Yeah. 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 Your identity is very much so wrapped up in how you can say the things you want to say.
Yeah, even now, my gosh, I'm worried. I'm about to go take this 1 month course, and I'm like, oh gosh, there's so many ways to express. It's overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. I'm barely just forming some sentences, very, very basic, not even functional sentences.
But I'm excited because it also helps. I think it helps with your own native language too, and how you express yourself. You become more aware of the words that you use
mm-hmm.
when you...
Yeah. Portuguese for 6 weeks. Oh, did you have any Spanish language interference when you did that?
Not really. It just kind of helped. Mm-hmm. It made me remember, like, words that I
mm-hmm.
used to like. And... mostly it was important to talk to my host family.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a host family makes a huge difference too.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the option to opt out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing, like when I was in Beijing, I had host family. I'm not going to ask my little old lady making dumplings for me, vegetarian ones at that,
mm-hmm.
like to speak English with me. She didn't know anything.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned a bias against the Beijing dialect earlier. Can you dig into that a little bit?
I purposely don't add the R at the end of, like, certain words.
Yeah.
Har.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Horror. I just don't think it sounds that beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But it is beautiful. The language, the sounds, in its own way. It's just not something that I can... pretends to carry in my identity. People often say, like,
mm-hmm.
I speak... When I'm in Taiwan, they say I speak like Beijing, and they find it disgusting. When I'm in China, they say I speak like I'm from Taiwan,
yeah.
or I speak like I'm from Hong Kong. So...
yeah.
People want to hear language the way they want to hear it, mm-hmm. or maybe the way they think you should be able to say it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's so many dialects in the world. It's cool.
There's so much wrapped up in language. There's so much. Like, I love the ideal of language's communication. Full stop. Done. Just done.
What do you mean?
Meaning get conveyed. I wanted to order this. I wanted to talk to this person about this subject. We communicated. We understood each other. Done. But there, it never really is that innocent. There's always other things happening with the language, right?
And that isn't that what makes it interesting?
It is and it isn't. Like, it is when it's positive or informative or those kinds of lovely things. And then when it gets discriminatory or condescending or any of those, then it's not. And it could go either way, and it's usually a mix of good and bad at the same time. But it's so complex.
It's mixed in with emotions.
Yeah.
It's mixed in with attitudes, too. Like this morning when I got run into with the scooter, right?
Yeah.
His attitude was like, oh, where were you looking? Where are you going? Like, let's figure out who to blame. And I just said to him, I am not blaming you. I'm in pain. Do you see me right now?
This is priority one right now.
Yeah. But the fact that I was able to express that was great, but I wasn't able to express much more than that. And I wonder that guy, you know, rolling away on his scooter on the sidewalk. Like, what did he think after that interaction? If it struck him.
Yeah.
The way that we're kind of, like, talking about.
Yeah.
Language and how it's wrapped up in other things.
Yeah. And is he mentioning that to someone else and having maybe regrets that he hit you at some point? Or is he just like, oh, I can't believe she jumped in front of me? And kind of, like, changing the story or something?
Yeah, like, what level do you want to reach in your communicating with other people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe it's those complexities that are things that...
Like, if it wasn't hard... Stephanie, if it wasn't hard, would you still want to do it?
If there was a language chip that was available today, I would gladly put it in my head and still practice the characters by hand. Yeah. I wouldn't stop practicing, but I definitely, for communication purposes and for reading purposes, if I could read in any language with no effort, that is a version of the ultimate world.
Do you like nuances?
Depending on the context. Yeah.
Do you feel free to express those nuances when you're learning?
Free to express them.
I know you're learning online, so it's probably a little bit different.
I don't think I've ever gotten to a high enough level yet to do that. I can identify differences in languages. I think that's something I can say I'm good at, but usually from outside. I haven't been able to do that from inside yet, and I hope as time goes on I can do that with Mandarin, but I have never gotten to nuance. Are you kidding? In Spanish, I was using time words. I didn't even inflect. I was seriously like going around like Buenos Aires, like, you know, saying things like, I basically the equivalent of, I go there yesterday. Like, I just kept throwing in time words to change things. And I was talking to people just here, there, and everywhere, and they didn't care. And I didn't care, and because they didn't care, I just kept going. Yeah.
People, like you're saying, people have to give each other the space to make mistakes, to process, to... all of that.
Yeah.
That's so cool. What a cool experience. That's why you had your love of Spanish moment.
Well, let's face it, the guys were kind of cute too.
I mean, you asked me before what I like about Spanish, so.
Oh my God. Language. So, Tatun, is that?
Tatun.
How did all of that happen? Going to Timor, learning that language?
Sure.
I, as a part of my like year abroad, gap year experience, I wanted to do some scuba diving. And one place in the world that has the most biodiverse marine life is this place in Timor-Leste.
Remind me proximity-wise where Timor is.
Yeah, so Indonesia. Tons and tons of islands. Timor-Leste used to be a part of Indonesia.
Okay.
But now it's not. I wonder if I should be even be saying this because I don't want this place to be ruined.
No, but tourism is like picking up there right now. And I wanted to do scuba diving, and so there's this organization, nonprofit out there doing reef check, basically classifying what areas have what types of coral and what types of sea life. And part of your community service was also like speaking English with people, teaching a little bit of that, having conversations. But you also had a host family. So again, there was that build up to something meaningful with language.
Yep. Hold that thought for a second. Okay. And you were there for 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. I did that for 6 weeks. And what was really great about this organization was that they're also training some of the local people to become dive masters.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's, you know, one way in which you really impact the community from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So we would be communicating with the dive master candidates as well, as they were reading these hard textbooks filled with like very technical language.
What does the language look like?
It looks like a little bit like Portuguese.
Oh, okay.
And then I think it has some elements of some Indonesian, like Bahasa words in there as well.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But it's a language all its own.
Right.
Yeah.
What struck you as either easy or difficult to learn about the language?
It's not a hard language to learn. What was easy about it was that it had some similarities to Portuguese and some to Spanish. I loved seeing those words in that language. They were like old friends coming in. What was hard about it was knowing that I have a limited amount of time to really use it.
Yeah.
And also then coming back from the experience and knowing, well, probably not have opportunity to use it again unless I make the effort to go back, to return. But all the same, I enjoyed learning it, and I enjoyed having conversations around the dinner table with my host family, where we would talk about, we would repeat topics and vocabularies from the day before, and then like pray for us to have safety when we're going to do these dives.
Yeah.
And you just pick up certain words and, you know, go to church with them. It's awesome.
Do you think you would go back, or do you think you would consciously try to keep the language going, language learning going with that language?
I want to go back, but it doesn't feel in my path now. Sometimes I still talk to Mima, who was one of the dive master candidates who I grew up quite close to.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll go back soon. I would love to, but I don't really have a reason to necessarily even use it, but I just love the way it sounds, and sometimes I'll even, when I do posts on my WeChat moments, I'll ask Mima if she can translate this into Tetun.
Yeah.
Because something that I want to express about that time or that moment or that photo, I feel should be expressed in Tetun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you're enjoying this conversation about the Chinese language and would like to participate, if you're studying in the Chinese language or if you come from the Chinese language and have learned other languages, either perspective is greatly, actually both perspectives are greatly appreciated on this channel. Let's have a conversation. Let's tape that sucker and let's get it into this podcast. Contact me and let's etch out the details on how to get you and your valuable language learning experience onto this podcast. All of my information is in the show notes. Also, all over social media except Facebook, I am Steph Fuccio, STEPHFUCCIO. That includes Gmail for my email, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and LinkedIn. So I look forward to hearing from you.
I'm getting the impression that languages come naturally, and I don't mean without effort or without studying, without hard work, but it feels like they might come pretty naturally to you because you kind of emotionalize them as you're learning them. Is that true at all, or am I projecting?
I emotionalize them, but I believe language learning isn't so much about the words as it is about wanting to connect with people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even at work, we have about, like, maybe a staff that's, like, 88% from China.
Mm-hmm.
The rest are foreigners from different parts of the world.
Yeah.
But I feel that I'm able to connect with people, not only because of my face,
mm-hmm.
that is one thing, but because I want to. Regardless of whether or not they want to connect with me,
yeah.
I'm going to speak Chinese to you.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna want to connect with you on that level and let you know that I want to connect with you on that level.
Yeah.
Let's talk about things. Let's talk about your life.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like in China when people switch to English with you, do they switch to English with you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you feel like that's
sometimes
them
my
putting
coworker
up a wall?
Does too, my co-teacher.
Okay.
Do I feel a wall?
Do you feel like they're putting up an emotional wall when they do that, or are they just wanting to? Do you feel like they're just trying to practice, or? Just,
I think they're trying to be respectful and helpful towards me.
Okay.
But I still keep talking to them in Chinese, and we have a working understanding.
Yeah.
That's just how it is.
Yeah.
And that's great. And we help each other out. Because I don't give off the sense, I think, that, like, oh, your English isn't so great,
mm-hmm.
so, like, please don't try and speak English to me. No.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that. It's
yeah.
more like I'm patient, and just as they're patient with me, and we're friends, you know,
yeah.
at the end of the day.
Yeah. So when you do study languages, what are your go-to methods? Or whichever part you want to talk about.
I think my favorite method is with people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the same topics of conversation come up over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly with things that I like to talk about.
Yeah.
Another way that I've really enjoyed learning Chinese this year is
mm-hmm.
through yoga.
Huh. Through talking about it or through doing it? Or
through
both?
Doing it and
yeah.
being a teacher. Or and also being a student.
Sure.
I go to a yoga studio where
yeah.
it's mostly people
yeah.
that are originally from China. The teacher does teach occasionally in English,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of the vocabulary where it's like, now sometimes I'm like, can I teach yoga in English? But I feel more comfortable in some ways teaching in Chinese now,
mm-hmm.
you know, talking
mm-hmm.
about opening your chest
yeah.
and all these things, because there's a sort of rhythm and
mm-hmm.
sort of cadence that comes with teaching yoga.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I associate Chinese with that too.
Yeah. Are there any, like, written techniques, any flashcards, do you record stuff and listen to?
I know that there are so many apps out there right
yeah,
now
yeah.
to teach Chinese. I always ask my friends
mm-hmm.
for those apps. I've downloaded some of them,
yeah.
and I just haven't started yet. I've
mm-hmm.
been pushing back this decision to learn Chinese
yeah.
4 years. Yeah. This has been years in the making. I chose not to come to China. I chose to go to India before because I just didn't want to tackle this side of me or my... some part of me knew what I was doing when I made that move. So I don't know yet. I love flashcards though, so I probably will do a lot of flashcards, especially on the keychains, like the small little ones, not the big bulky ones that you carry around.
For any of the other languages that you had learned, did you have any written methods for any part of the languages?
I always carry a book around with me whenever I'm learning a language. So if I'm just talking to someone and I just want to know that vocabulary word quickly, I'll put it down. And people are always happy to help you.
They
like that you're engaging with their language and that you feel happy too as well learning something. So I think carrying around a book is one of my best
tips / insider secrets.
How about listening?
Be ready. Be prepared.
Yeah, for sure. How about listening? Do you listen to things in multiple languages?
I do. I enjoy eavesdropping. I enjoy people watching. I enjoy seeing and hearing what types of topics people from other cultures like to talk about. But I don't think that helps as much as trying yourself.
Just using the language.
I've been told to, you know, watch soap operas and TV and that sort of thing. If I can get myself to sit still, maybe one day I'll do that. And I need good recommendations for, like, which ones should I watch? Which one will I fall in love with? If they had, you know what? If they had reality TV in China.
Oh, they do.
Like.
It's like, different.
Like
yeah.
trashy reality TV. Where I could learn Chinese from that.
Yeah.
I would totally watch that.
The thing that they're calling reality TV, to my understanding, and I'm saying this through from Chinese to English, and now my interpretation, is it's more of like a competitive celebrity event kind of way. It's not reality TV like the American side where you just stick a camera in there and people pretend to be real and just go about their daily lives. It's not like that kind of reality TV. So it's a very, very different experience.
It's like celebrities showing their lives.
Not even that. They're like doing, like there's one really popular one from Korea that came over and now there's a Chinese version called Running Man and I don't remember the Chinese name. Have you heard of this one?
No.
Super, super, super popular. And the episode, I'm not really super into celebrities and I'm not familiar with enough Chinese celebrities, so I was really like, even if this was celebrities I liked or knew, I'd still be like, because they were like doing like little competitive things, like running things or goofy games or like things like that.
Yeah, like the game show.
Yeah, kind of. So it's more like that. So they're calling it reality because it's not them acting, it's not them singing, it's them being real.
Yeah.
So it's a different flavor of what reality TV shows.
Nah. Give me a cross of Love Island and Real World and The Bachelorette and I will learn Chinese.
I wonder. Hey, listeners, if you know of anything like this, please do let us know. I was following a woman on YouTube. Her handle was Lena Around. She unfortunately had a medical situation. She had to go back home to Scandinavia. But she, I have it saved, actually, in my YouTube recommendations. She talked about TV shows that she listened to / watched to. She got to a ridiculously high fluent level. She was interviewing people for her channel in Chinese and doing stuff like that.
Wow.
Yeah. And that kind of thing. But I haven't actually sat down and watched them yet because I, again, with like 300 words under my belt, I'd be looking everything up, so I was kind of waiting for...
You still might be into the story, you know?
Maybe.
I get the girl.
But to be honest with you, I don't watch soap operas or like things like that in English.
Yeah.
So I...
Why does the turning point always have to be when the grandma or the matriarch figure goes into the hospital? That always happens.
Right?
Always.
So true, it's so true. But yes, for me, I just think I've had people recommend movies and TV shows and things like that, but the stuff I like to watch is so, like, deep, esoteric, crazy stuff, yeah. or horror movies, which you don't need any language for, that I'm like, like 5 years from now, I'll go look for those movies. But right now, it's not really in the cards.
So you're looking for stuff that you can do right now?
I'm not, because I know the stuff I want, content-wise, the stuff I want to, it doesn't exist with that language. So I'm using the HSK test to get my language up to the ability where I can go into the things I want to do.
What about, like, Dora? Like, Chinese Dora? You know, like, Dora the Explorer? Like, you know how I learned
from
Sesame
Street? Wasn't into that in any other language. Yeah, so that's the thing. I'm like, I want to read, like, current events. Funky as that may be in different languages with different perspectives, I do. I want to read that stuff. I want to listen to podcasts coming from people, not just super edited versions like in the newspapers, but I want to see what people are saying about where they are or what they're thinking and all that kind of stuff. So I want to do those things, but that's like way up here. So I'm just pushing through all the test material to get the vocabulary and the grammar to be able to do that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's going to take me a while. But yeah, the graded readers are probably helpful for a lot of people, but I'm really picky on what I consume, and I don't really want to read a lot of those stories. They're just not interesting to me, and you have to be interested in order to stay motivated.
Yeah.
So
maybe because I'm like an elementary school teacher, I don't mind that Blue's Clues sort of
I'm not even sure I was into a lot of that when I was a kid. And I'm not trying to be like, oh, I'm so mature, because I'm very goofy. But I just, like, other than the Muppet Show, I was not even into a lot of kid stuff when I was a kid. Okay, Sesame Street too. You mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
But select characters, not the whole show.
Maybe Mr. Rogers. Should I know Mr. Rogers?
I did like him, but I felt like it was a little slow. Like, I trusted him.
Yeah.
I wanted him to be my neighbor. No, for real, I had really, really cold neighbors. And I was like, can you come next door here? I mean, come on.
Yeah. Gun and some neonite.
Yeah. Like, I remember watching, like, space programs as a kid and being like, ooh, that's interesting. But there weren't that many at that time on TV. So I was just like, I don't know, just different content.
It's good that you, like, know that about yourself.
Well, it took me a long time to get here. I tried to use all of these things that people recommended and all the languages I've never been able to get to a high level in, and failed, and got demotivated because I kept doing things that didn't really resonate.
I just feel like to talk to people. Mm. What about talking, just language exchange with people?
I'm much more of a, despite the fact that I have two podcasts, I'm much more of a written person. So reading and writing than I am a speaking person. The irony is not lost on me.
Yeah. But isn't language about coming outside of your comfort zone on some level?
Yeah. Sure. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe it's not. I don't know. I think language is ... You could fill that in like a million different ways. Yeah. And that's part of the beauty and the beast of the whole process, is how complex it is.
Language is friendship too.
What's that?
Language is connection.
Oh yeah.
Friendship.
Yeah. And it's funny because when I was teaching English in Vietnam and some other places, but really, really there, it was the language at that time of opportunity. And then I went to grad school in the US, and a lot of the rhetoric folks in the same department who I was teaching alongside of, but not necessarily with in the same classroom, were talking about language as pain, language as torture. And I just came back from seeing all these people's lives just go, and all of their opportunities expand because of their hard work in getting another language under their belt. Mm. And I just kind of went, no, it can be that, but it's also
because
this.
Because we have the privilege of thinking that way as foreigners.
Mm.
But this was English is number one, yeah.
Yeah.
It was number one. It won't be soon.
Yes. Because it hasn't always been. There's different languages that are lingua franca. But I'm talking about people in the U.S. in grad school who had this idea that language is torture, language is pain, language is used to to hurt people. Period. One story. And I just... it was really hard to have a conversation about teaching languages as a positive experience. But it can be... It's a rainbow.
It's all of those things. It can be all of those things.
Yeah, it definitely can be friendship. A few words at the right time in the right situation, no matter how funky the pronunciation is sometimes, can just be like
totally
huge.
I had conversations with my grandma in Taiwan my second semester learning Chinese abroad about taking a dump. Legit.
Isn't that where I thought that was going to go?
Not the quality of it. Yeah. Not the quantity. Just like, I don't even remember what joke it was. We'd just be like, Dabian, Dabian. It's about wanting to, for me, it's about wanting to just connect.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we need the opportunity to connect.
Yeah. So we're going to touch bases with you in a few weeks after your course is over. Any predictions on successes and challenges that you might experience over that time period?
Today, when I went to go sign up for the course and kind of speak with the teacher, as he was leveling me, I felt how friendly he was. I felt his passion for the subject. I saw college students around the campus in grass and trees, and I felt China opening to me a little bit. So I think that over the next few weeks I'll feel like a student again, which is something that I've wanted and haven't fed in a long time. So I'm excited to learn. I think that as confident as I am with knowing that I'm a language and a words person now, I think in a few weeks I'll feel that even more. I know it's going to be hard work. It's going to be hard work because I don't have the discipline that I once had when I was a student. So I'm interested not only to see how my language ability changes, I'm interested to see how I as a person will change and grow. I also think that over the next few weeks I'll probably meet a lot of people and build relationships in a way that I think you only can through a language class. In language classes, you have to put yourself out there a lot. You're trying to express your ideas. Other people are listening to you. You get a sort of spotlight, whether it's being called in the class or just sharing with a partner. And so you asked, like, what is another great way to learn language? I think it's through partner learning. You're motivated. If you trust the person in front of you, you're motivated to share yourself with them and also hear some of their story. So, yeah, talking about stories over the next few weeks, and we'll see.
Any final thoughts on anything we've talked about today?
I'm just hoping that this whole thing inspires me and gets me to start having a different relationship with China, and also that it will inspire me to keep writing. I'm coming from a trip back from Japan, coming in from last night, and having been there, I had to look at a lot of characters that were similar to Chinese to discern meaning. Um,
Yeah. I think I have hopes, and I guess I want to say to people that are trying to learn language that it's not always about the words you say, but it's about, like, the bridges you want to build. And if people feel that you want to build a bridge, nothing else that matters. Not the way you speak, not the tones. You can have a conversation with your grandma about shit. The end.
Literally. Well, thank you for doing this today. I really, really look forward to
having me.
Follow up in a month. A month from now, right? A month?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Changing Scripts podcast. Again, this is a sister project with my own language learning vlogging on YouTube, also called Changing Scripts, so come on over and take a peek at that. Again, if you are learning the Chinese language, or if you're coming from the Chinese language learning another language, I'd love to interview you for this podcast. Please feel free to contact me in any social media way that you see fit. Go ahead and contact me, and we will hash out how to get you on the sound creation known as the Changing Scripts podcast. A lot more is coming your way soon.